It's not perhaps a garret in the romantic sense of such a space, but we can just imagine young Stephen climbing the steps to the attic of his family home in Scranton, seeking space for his imagination so that he could bring to life that harrowing story by Edgar Allan Poe, The Cask of the Amontillado, for his English class. And space, as we'll find, is a consideration that resonates with Stephen to this day. Marie Karam, Stephen's mother, told reporter Gia Mazur of the Times Tribune in 2016 that when he was 9 or 10 years old, Stephen wrote and illustrated a short story about the Karam family shopping for a Christmas tree, a tale that focused on the family dynamics. So, at a young age, Stephen Karam was telling stories, setting them sometimes during holiday seasons, revealing how important the human relationships in families are, and even writing a film script in the attic. His celebrated play, The Humans, opened on Broadway in 2016 and received the 2016 Tony Award for Best Play. It was also a finalist for that year's Pulitzer Prize in Drama. As it happens, the play centers on family dynamics at holiday time. The parents, Eric and Deirdre Blake, travel to New York City from Scranton for Thanksgiving dinner, and we find ourselves in a basement duplex apartment. That means there are steps to climb and spaces to fill with tension. Gia Mazur tells us in her article for the Times Tribune that The Humans had its run at the Helen Hayes Theater, directly across from the Majestic Theater, where young Stephen took in the Phantom of the Opera, his very first Broadway experience, with his English class on a field trip from East Scranton Intermediate School, 8th grade, he tells her, saying such lovely coincidences remind him where he has come from. Stephen will tell us shortly that whether he intends to or not, the dots always connect back to Scranton. The beautiful synchronicities continue as the Scranton Shakespeare Festival will present the regional premiere of The Humans on Thanksgiving weekend, timing that seems so right and fitting. Stephen Karam is this year's guest for the King's College Visiting Writers Series on the campus in Wilkes-Barre, and he will give a talk with a Q&A session and a book signing on November 19th, Wednesday, November 19th, and the public is invited to attend, free of charge. When Stephen Karam returned to the University of Scranton to work with students in the theater department some years ago, he stopped in at the WVIA studios to talk about his powerful play, Columbinus, written with Scranton native P.J. Paparelli, centering on the Columbine Massacre, and also about his popular piece, Speech and Debate, inspired by his time in high school in Scranton, and his work with the legendary speech and debate coach, theater maker, and his mentor, Ellen Langan. Mrs. Langan, to many, Mrs. L. And that's where we begin our recent phone conversation with Stephen Karam.
I absolutely, it's one of my favorite things to talk about. I mean, my first solo venture play after Columbinus was called Speech and Debate because of my participation at Scranton High School in Speech and Debate, which exposed me to so many plays and drama and writing of speeches. And she was an incredible mentor, hilarious, tough, inspiring. I also caught Ellen Langan. I mean, she's Mrs. Langan to me forever. So I can call her Mrs. Langan, but I caught her on stage in a production of The Glass Menagerie at the, I forget what the actual theater's name was at the time, but it was connected to the Lucan Center. So it's actually, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's where the Scranton Shakes production of The Humans that's happening after Thanksgiving is actually taking place in that same building. So even when I'm trying to not connect dots, they all somehow keep folding back on each other and taking me back to to Mrs. Langan. And Agnes Cummings, who's another treasure, an unbelievable actor, was the assistant coach of the speech and debate team, directed a lot of the competition plays while I was at Scranton High School. And the two of them just, you know, they were so impressive and meant so much to so many students because they cared. And they really just saw each of us as individuals and what was special about us. And I think speech and debate is that rare thing where there's so many categories that a good leader like Mrs. Langan and an artist could really look at you and say, like, I think you're quite good at this writing thing. Maybe you should do original oratory and write your own speech and deliver it. Or you are actually a pretty good actor. Why don't you consider this? Or you're very interested in current events and politics and guide people towards Lincoln Douglas debate or cross-examination debate. So yeah, it's the rare thing that from your youth that keeps coming back to me, because the skills I learned from her and being exposed to speech and debate and her mentorship and Agnes Cummings' mentorship too, that just really sort of solidified my belief in myself, but also applies to even coming back to King's or anytime I stand in front of a classroom. I even think for somebody who's introverted, my ability to even do that, to sort of push through my own fears or desire to be in my pajamas on a couch somewhere away from an audience, it's those life skills are with me every day.
I always think of Mrs. Langan as being really a taskmaster because she wanted you to do your best.
Oh, 100%. That Southern charm, but also that Southern grit and toughness. So yeah, they really complemented each other. And I also have to, like, you're making me think about my English teachers and even math. I was never a good math and science student, but I had so many people who, even in other fields and directions, were just very, very encouraging and inspiring. And, you know, a lot of English classes that's where I had the reading Arthur Miller's The Crucible and The Glass Menagerie. This was just part of the curriculum in the Scranton public school system that I, looking back, I'm like, you know, there's no, it's hard to just underestimate the value of that, because for someone like me, it sent me to the Scranton Public Library looking for more plays, you know, because I didn't really even know they existed. I didn't know this whole realm existed. It was often just introduced as part of a mandatory required reading along with the Scarlet Letter.
As you talk just there, Stephen, about the impact and the importance of being exposed to different playwrights, even if you don't like what they do, I was thinking that you actually did an adaptation of The Seagull by Chekhov, and there's a character in The Seagull that's a playwright, an idealistic playwright. Is it Constantine?
Yes, who's quite tortured, yeah.
And I wondered, was that a way into your adapting? Did you relate it anyway to Constantine in that story?
Yeah. That's the obvious one. And so for sure, that's a no-brainer. I mean, it's every playwright, you know, rolls their eyes at what a melodramatic disaster that character is, but only because we identify with large parts of him. The idealism, the depression that comes with failure, the struggle to make new work. But the miracle of that play, and why I think it gets done again and again, is that depending on what stage you are in your life, or even at any stage, you might find yourself identifying with many of the characters who all have very specific but identifiable problems. And so there's the tortured mother-son relationship. There's elements of heartbreak. Everybody's in love with the wrong person. Everybody's love is unrequited in The Seagull, which is also probably why people love it, because it, you know, at some point in everybody's life, there was heartbreak. So yes, for sure. But I also feel like I'm drawn to that play because I feel a little bit like everybody in it.
I often love to talk to writers about sense of place, but we know you're interested in sense of space. You care very much about space in life, I'm sure, but space in the theater too.
Oh yeah, I feel like you know, there's the architecture of a play in terms of literary talk, like what is the actual structure, and what's holding it together and how is it built. But then I do a lot of thinking, especially with initial productions, about, you know, I have an obsession with non-naturalistic scenery. There's a Thornton Wilder quote, which I'm going to mangle, but it has something to do with his own discovery of how non-naturalistic scenery or a void kind of effortlessly intimates the numinous or the universe. Like it does so much work at expanding the imagination of an audience. And I think contrary to that, even if I have a play like The Humans, where it's very architecturally heavy and precise, and it is in fact like a two-story, almost like a dollhouse you look like you could walk into and live in, even that's built with the idea of a kind of hyper-naturalism that almost folds back on itself, you know, slathered in white paint to the point where there's something a bit strange or off. And this is all like, I'm talking about this, just stuff that I love that sort of gets to be unconscious for an audience. Nothing an audience needs to be like, you know, pretentiously thinking about. But yeah, I do love thinking about space and how connected it is to, you know, the story itself and how it's received. It's kind of what the magic of theater, that the same story can be told in so many different productions. I'm so excited that the play has found its way, you know, that Scranton Shakes has found a way to produce it. My home turf, it's been so many different places and different countries, and like 13 different languages, that for it to sort of land in Scranton means so much.
What will the resonances be then? Because it's a couple leaving Scranton, going to Thanksgiving dinner in New York, but it's right there, as you say, where the Lucan Center used to be. Have you thought that there's kind of a fun house?
No, but yeah. But I guess in the same way all plays are transporting, yeah, I guess I don't know. I feel like it maybe it will have a kind of fun house effect for people watching it, but you know, all of theater is such a crazy fun house, because if you're watching it on Broadway in New York City, you know, everybody from New York in that audience sort of knew what the neighborhood was in New York City that it was taking place. But I still feel like the play was more special to people who were coming from Pennsylvania, more people who had a passing connection with Scranton, that sort of, because the emotional resonance of the play is sort of a family who comes from that area, and less about, you know, it's not about a family that grew up in the Upper West Side or Upper East Side of Manhattan. But yeah, I don't know. You'll have to tell me. I think it's going to be special, whatever it is, whatever the feeling is.
What's nice for us here is, and people have taken buses to New York to see it and so forth, and care about what you do. And it's always important when creative individuals from our area go off and do things that resonate around the country or internationally even, but don't forget about home. In the case of, say, Faulkner, who roots his stories in Yucknapatawpha County, it's Yucknapatawpha County for sure, but there are those human, let's use that word, those human resonances that can echo into Saskatchewan or a place like that. Is that sort of what you feel about Scranton, as you might allude to it when you write?
Yeah, I mean, even when it's not a literal reference, or, you know, I'm working on things that are less, maybe more abstract or less about a literal place or town, I just think the only thing I know is that, yeah, for me and probably for most writers, the place, the most formative years are those years where did you grow up? Where was home? And so for me, that's, you know, always going to be Scranton. And so I don't know that there's, no matter what I'm writing about or how I'm writing about it, there's no getting around that, I don't think. And so, you know, no matter where I'm placing things, there's just a real pull, a kind of something that's just unavoidable, that I just feel like even when I'm not writing about Scranton, I feel like I end up writing about Scranton, if that makes sense. You know, I was just in the mountains of, had a residency at the house where Hemingway died, his final home, Ernest Hemingway. So it was a playwriting residency out there. And, you know, I learned a little bit about him, and he was pretty obsessively, even when he was writing about, and for whom the bell tolls, he was writing about or descriptive passages of the Spanish mountains, but it's very clear that he was writing about Idaho, the small town in Idaho. And so I felt like there was something that sort of made me go like, oh yeah, I know about that. Like somehow, even if I'm writing about other mountains, it's the Appalachian Mountains. It's the ones that I know. Or if I'm writing about a lake, it's probably, you know, my parents' lake. Or so there's just a way you carry what you know for those first, I'd say 18 years, but I'm back several times every year. So I've never stopped coming home.
We'd imagine that students are interested, if they're aspiring writers or not, in the difference between writing for stage and for film, and you have, in the case of The Humans, brought it to the screen as well. Now, you can't separate yourself from it, but do you feel that it might be, or do people tell you it's a different experience when they see the film?
I'm trying to think. I guess I don't. I haven't been approached that much by people, but I would say the overall experience just from even film festivals and the launch of it and the critical response. I mean, there's no avoiding the Rotten Tomatoes of experience of launching a film around the world was that, yeah, I feel like it was probably split between people who were surprised by how different it felt, but also a lot of people were sort of like, I think, excited and energized by how a kind of untranslatable thing, which is what a good play is. It really can't be turned into a film. So you're starting with a problem that isn't really solvable. And in this case, it was sort of this omnipresent, getting to watch every room and everybody in every space at all times, a kind of dollhouse view experience of a story with no crossfades in real time. It's a unique thing to do in a play. In film, I sort of thought about a framing device of more leaning into what is essentially a genre people know, like psychological horror, where there's something unsettling about the framing and the devices, the way the story is being told, even though it's almost like watching found footage. You're watching a family stumble through a series of events in rooms, spilling in and out of the frame, in a way that's sort of quietly unsettling. And the play is just a totally different experience. It's more, you know, if you're the type of person who wants to interpret it more like a Neil Simon comedy, you can kind of hold on to that until you realize, oh, wow, from the beginning, this other kind of element is kind of baked into the story. Even though it starts with a thud, a lot of people, if you don't like a scare, you can pretty much fend that off until the last 10 minutes of the play. So I think I just really loved, the reason that I even tried to do it was that they were just, in my mind, I was like, wow, these really will be two different things. And that felt super exciting to me.
And the other thing about this Grandin Shakespeare Festival production is that they were able to schedule it at Thanksgiving.
That's really wild. That'll be you were talking about the fun house. That's going to be the real fun house for people, because people would have already just had their uncomfortable family conversations the day before. So I think everything will be finely tuned to what that tension can be and what that love is, what the two things coinciding are.
Just one more question, because we have a lot of listeners here who are opera lovers, and they took note when you were working on Nico Muhly's Dark Sisters.
Oh, yeah.
And that's another way that you have been able to draw on your talents when you're doing something that's for the operatic stage and not the theatrical stage. Is it something where you just shifted gears and were able to do it?
It was really Nico. I just thought Nico was an incredible, he's a great friend to this day. I was just talking with him the other day. He's just an incredible composer. And so I was 27, I think, at the time, and I just thought, when we were introduced, I was like, what an opportunity to have a chance to work with a young composer who was so gifted. So it just felt like a gift fell into my lap, and we've continued to collaborate. He did incidental music for Sons of the Prophet in New York City off Broadway. He did the score for the Humans film, and hopefully there'll be more in the future. But yeah, I've had to turn down other operas. I had a chance to write an opera for the Met, which I regret only because I just couldn't do two things at one time. But I hope there might even be more of that in my future if I'm lucky enough to get another offer.
Award-winning writer Stephen Karam, native of Scranton, author of The Humans, Sons of the Prophets, Speech and Debate, and more. He is an Obie Award winner and a two-time Pulitzer Prize finalist. Recent honors include two Drama Critics Circle, Outer Critics Circle, and Drama Desk Awards, as well as the Lucille Lortel Award, Drama League Award, and Hull Warner Award. He is a graduate of Brown University, and he will return to Northeastern Pennsylvania as the visiting lecturer for the King's College series that is so important to young writers and to the community at large, the Visiting Writers Series at King's College in Wilkes-Barre. It is free and open to the public. During the day, Stephen will be visiting classes, and then on Wednesday, November 19th in the evening at 7 in the Burke Auditorium, he will offer a public presentation, a question and answer session, and a book signing. And you can find the Burke Auditorium in the McGowan School of Business, 131 North River Street. And it will be a wonderful chance to hear him. It's Stephen Karam of Scranton, Pennsylvania, back in Northeastern Pennsylvania. And he will be this year's guest speaker for the King's College Visiting Writers Series. And he will be visiting classes during the day and then offering a free public presentation, Q&A session, and book signing on Wednesday, November 19th at 7 in the evening in the Burke Auditorium, and that's in the McGowan School of Business, 131 North River Street in Wilkes-Barre. And you can find more information at kings.edu, kings.edu. Karam wrote and directed his first feature film for A24. That's The Humans. We've talked about The Humans with him. It was released in 2021, and it featured in its soundtrack this music. This is a piece titled Valencia by Caroline Shaw, performed by the Ataka Quartet, and it's used in the soundtrack for the film version of Stephen Karam's The Humans. In addition to his personal appearance in Wilkes-Barre at King's College on November 19th, the Scranton Shakespeare Festival will present the regional premiere of this Tony Award-winning play, and it is The Humans, directed by Michael Bradshaw Flynn. And appropriately, it will run through the Thanksgiving weekend, November 28th, 29th, and 30th. And that's at Kreitler Hall at St. Luke's Episcopal Church, Wyoming Avenue in Scranton. On the 28th, Friday the 28th at 7, Saturday, November 29th at 2, and again that evening, the 29th at 7, and then Sunday, November 30th at 2 o'clock. That's the Scranton Shakespeare Festival production of The Humans by Stephen Karam, directed by Michael Bradshaw Flynn, running the 28th through the 30th at Kreitler Hall at St. Luke's Episcopal Church, Wyoming Avenue in Scranton. And for more information, on the web, ScrantonShakes.com, ScrantonShakes.com.